last week they talked about Esau trading his inheritance for instant gratification. So something happened this week where I realized that I did that, and it wasn't a super like obvious. I mean, it was obvious, but I didn't know until after. Or not, well, only because they taught on that, but like, even though he traded his inheritance, like giving into instant gratification, it's not always super obvious how drastic it is. So tying that into tonight is like a promise, because if you, like, they're teaching, if you hear it and carry it all week and apply it, it will change the way you live and how your life is. So don't trade comfortability this week, or like thinking about other things, because you're not aware of how drastic that is, or what you're trading, or how, like, how much this could actually change you. Even it's hard, but it's, or it's simple, but it's hard. But just remember the promise of it, and don't trade that for comfortability.
Okay.
So I liked what you said, and that there's like small things that we may not realize. You said you kind of realize in the moment. I think there's a lot of things that we don't realize in the moment, but that ultimately, of course, if we can all hear it in the way that he's talking about it in the hosting context, but if you think about it in the broader picture of where Yahweh's had us, even in just the most recent weeks, that is a continued call to refinement to the little things, just like we've always, you know, to a degree we carry an awareness of the big things, but he's asking us to take care of and deal with the little things. And it's in those little moments that it feels like he's really refining us. And it definitely feels like tonight's another one of those opportunities. Last week, Mom said that it's inspection time. And I feel like something that just needs to be said in terms of a tone being set, continuing off of Sean, is that that wasn't just for last week, but that's moving forward. We've been in it, and we're going to keep moving in it. So it is still inspection time. I don't even know really how to like dot connect last week, because it just feels like it was another one of those absolute bomb drops. And it was life-shaking, it was life-changing, it was trajectory correcting, it was all of it. And we are being given, as a family, as a community, and as his people, we're being given such a deep understanding of both his character, but then what we're called to do in the reconciling of where we're at towards that. And it has to do with our minds, our thoughts, those deep places, those things that maybe we're unaware of, but that we're growing in awareness of, like Sean was touching on. And it's through this pattern of teshuvah that we were further brought into a deeper understanding of last week. So tonight, carrying the work that we've done throughout this last week, heading into a new portion, dealing with the bitter root in us that ultimately is a blueprint for our lives, but also a way to allow us to see freedom in what keeps us from him, what keeps him from us, what allows us to stay dead, what allows us to stay cold, stay broken, stay enslaved, what allows us to keep ourselves in a certain seat of idolatry and putting ourselves in a position of our lives, and ultimately as we continue to rid ourselves of that self-preservation, that tendency towards preserving what we want. And so it just feels like as we continue, the excuses are disappearing, and in that place we're gonna continue to abide. And tonight is gonna just be another one of those places where that's gonna be further blown up, touched, and at the same time, that's not a hard thing, because it absolutely is a blessing knowing that His goodness is represented in all of it. And so we've been doing the work as a family to understand from that place, and we will continue in that tonight.
I was laughing earlier because I was telling Dad and Sean, I opened up my iPad and I opened up to today for Torah 147. I said, look how far I got. It just says word. That's all there is on there. There's something I feel like I want to do. I hope it does what I want it to do. But there's a couple things I want to highlight before we do it. One, how many weeks do we have left? Eight?
Until Tabernacles?
Yep.
Or Torah portions?
Tabernacles. Now we're down to 8 weeks. So there's some pretty strong things that have been called out as we end this journey. One of the biggest things was we're not playing church, and here's what's not going to be tolerated. What's happening right now during inspection time is he's making that a reality.
Yeah.
You're about to build, you're about to cross over, and you are not allowed to build. You're not allowed to build with things that I said that I'm not going to tolerate.
Right.
The interesting thing about that is that we are actually in inspection, because that could mean me. I've got 8 weeks to allow him to inspect me, to make sure that when I cross over, I am moldable, because he's going to train me for war. I've never done this before. If you're not moldable and you are hard, you will leave. Ultimately, what he's saying is I am inspecting to make sure that I can still be king in your life. That's what happened last week, is let me expose what happens when you say Lord of Lords and you want me to be king. Let's test that, because you're going to need me to be king if you go to war. You're going to need me to be king in the promised land. And if you actually don't really want me to be king, then ultimately what's happening is that hardening of the heart, or like Pharaoh, he will be capped in what he can do, and it will be a detriment if he's not able to actually be your king. So he's going through and inspecting to make sure, are you sure I can be king? Are you sure I can be Lord of Lords? Are you sure that you agree that I'm sovereign? Are you sure that you believe my plans for you more than the plans you think you have for you? Are you sure you're going to be able to walk that out? Are you sure you're going to be able to surrender? Are you sure you're going to be able to lay down? Are you sure you're going to be able to say, look, not my will, but your will? And if all of those questions do not point to yes, 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 goodbye. For my good, for your good, for his good, right? Because it's not going to work. It's not going to work if he says, I don't tolerate this, and then be like, well, you know, I guess I'll just tolerate that.
Right.
Guess what's going to happen? We're going to cross over, start all over again. And I'm pretty sure, I hope all of us want that level of inspection on each one of us, because none of us want to get 8 weeks post Tabernacles and be like, rein it back in.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So we've got 8 weeks of some shaking. I said that the contractions were getting strong, and they did continue to get strong. And the Torah portions are just, they're just such a beautiful, going back to what Sean said, it is so easy to forget. I studied this Torah portion. I mean, it's 13 verses. I'm in the Torah portion. I am aware of the Torah portion. Thursday, not aware. I don't get it. Everything's crumbling. We're not going to make it. I'm just going down this road. And then I go back to the Torah portion. Be strong, be courageous, and trust that I am. Oh my gosh, I was just manifesting the Torah portion. Praise the Lord, I didn't go crazy. I was just manifesting the Torah portion. Read the Torah portion, snapped me right back into alignment, along with some other words, to just say, be strong and be courageous. And what does that actually mean? It means that you're not going to, I'm sure he's going to teach a great message, but just really quick. To be strong and courageous doesn't mean be strong. And I'm just going to suffer through it. It means open your eyes, look right at it, seize it, and say, I will overcome you.
Right. Okay.
That's not a be strong and courageous, like going like this and just being like, I guess God will take care of it. He's saying, no, you be strong and be courageous. Trust that I am God. Open your eyes, because you're going to face this thing head on.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
So that's what's going on. And so anyways, And we got a lot going on. We have a lot going on. We got 8 weeks, and then who connected tonight's the night that Yahweh spoke about at Hanukkah? Remember the word? Morning time, leadership shift, because the commissioning is coming. The official Joshua state of mind, which has been his email for like 15 years. The official Joshua commissioning is right now, which is the mourning and preparedness that he told you back at Hanukkah when the word over Hanukkah was established and deepening and deepen your sonship. At that time, I actually questioned him, why are you asking us to reestablish sonship? Why are you asking us to go deeper in sonship? Why are you saying off the grid we should be focusing on sonship? Haven't we already done that? He's like, trust me. Trust me, there is a deepening of sonship. And I genuinely was like, why are we taking like 8 steps backwards? And he was like, I got it. That's a be strong and be courageous and just be obedient and surrender. So he gives us that word in the midst of sonship and then says, now you've got to, in your identity as sonship, there's going to be a change. And it's not going to be the way that it was, but it's going to be for a war. And tonight's that night that he was talking about. Right? So, I mean, the morning, we had 30 days of mourning, and there were some deadlines there, but this is the Torah portion that was talking about. Amen? All right, here's what we want to do, or here's what I want to do. And I don't know what it looks like, and we might do it twice. I feel like the second time around, it just gets a little bit better. But I wanted to open with a song, because I just in case there's any Esau spirit that hasn't been called out yet, I'm telling you right now, it will.
Yeah.
That is it. Now here, I have one more word and then we'll do it. I'm sorry. When Sean's talking about an Esau moment, that actually happened to him. He went on a walk this morning. Yahweh said, what you did is going to sabotage your future for instant gratification. You're trading for instant gratification what I'm promising you in the future. You want to test me? And I was like, Sean, here's what's crazy, you guys. I can preach all day long. All of you guys can say amen. What I care about is a son who says, I heard Yahweh say. Yeah. That is a trade. Yeah. Perfect. That's moldable. Not because he became an Esau for 2 seconds, because he did, but he heard from Yahweh himself. That is a warning. And he showed him a picture of what he was exchanging. Mm-hmm. Ask him, am I trading? And if I am for this moment, what am I trading in for? And let him show you. It's crazy. He had an absolute miracle today after that. He came home, he's telling me about it, and I said, Sean, Yahweh could have said, let me test you and see how your faith is, and I'll show you a couple of promises in like 10 years. 4 hours. Absolute instantaneous promise. To show him that's what it looks like when you don't trade. Wow. Just a taste. So when I say that about Esau, be moldable and learn. Don't lie on the other side and be like, it's not really a big deal, and I don't really know what I'm doing, but I really like what I'm doing right now, so I think I'm just going to stay doing what I'm doing. Yeah. When that happens, start the clock. Yeah. 8 weeks. He's going to weed it out. Mm-hmm. Amen? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So I want you to hear this song. And I'm hoping that this song is just going to break up. Here's another way to say it. It's going to break up the Esau in you, but it's going to break up if you've been subject to an Esau. Mm-hmm. Because anybody who has a bitter root, then it affects the community. So any bitter root, we all are affected by it. I want us to let this song break that up so we can receive the word to be commissioned. Okay. Maybe we don't need to do it again. Maybe at the end. But do you get that? Too much healing in my soul? God's got his hands all over me. Amen? All right. Let's get commissioned.
I didn't really understand the significance of, I'm glad you brought that up about Hanukkah and commissioning, because I didn't put that together, that time frame, and understand the significance of that until this afternoon when I was thinking about it. But just to give you some insight into the weightiness of what it feels like for me personally, I'm 45, got saved at 19. So it's been 25 years. And there is something about the last 25 years of my life, since I was 19 years old and got introduced to him, that is culminating right now. And
you've been saying that for like the last 6 months.
And it's crazy to me that we're talking about being commissioned. Think about everything we've walked out of. And now we're getting read by Torah, where the transfer is happening for them to actually step in to what they were created to step into. Think about that. Salvation for 25 years. And when it comes to a commissioning, all of you are being commissioned, but that's not, it's not a, it's just the beginning.
Yeah.
And a commission is he's allowing you to partner with him. And ultimately, the root word of commission is commandment. So it's not optional. So think about this. For me personally,
the great commission, great commandment.
I met Yeshua at 19 years of age. Everything I've been through in the last 25 years, including all of the utter chaos and pressure and everything that's been happening in the last several months, has all led up to tonight. And it could bring me to tears, because as we're getting commissioned, as we're being commanded to step into what I believe we were called to day one, that we couldn't have imagined, as that's culminating tonight, I have our first grandchild hearing this sermon, the first sermon she's ever heard
live,
has to do with us stepping into what Yahweh intended.
Yeah.
That's wild to me. And I feel like tonight could be, I mean, I don't know how you can walk away from what Yahweh is speaking tonight, what he's doing, what is actually taking place, and not feel validated, affirmed, embracing that we have 8 weeks of inspection. You know, I get the time frame, but I feel like the anointing resting on tonight is moving beyond inspection, if you're ready to receive that as it's intended to be imparted to us. Mm-hmm. That we don't have to stay in a place of inspection, because we have been heavily inspected over the last several weeks. And so I want to Yahweh brought Nehemiah to my, just dropped it in my spirit over the course of the week, and I've been meditating on that. And I believe it just is one of those things that validates where we're at, but he also brought me back to the very beginning of our walk with him, the things that we absolutely apprehended about his word that became part of our DNA. And that's what he's had me pondering as we lead up to this word that is signifying a transition of the wilderness season that we have been in is coming to an end. And we're actually, after all of that, you would think after 25 years, you get to a place of accomplishment, but it isn't really accomplishment. He's saying after 25 years of testing and inspection, now I can command you. You are only now at the place where I can commission you, which means where I can give you a command and expect you to follow through on that command. Think about that. So when you think about calling, I think about that all the time. Like, what is our calling? when I ask what is our calling and I think about that, it's also what is our calling, right? You're a part of this house. You're a part of what Yahweh's done with this ministry. And so what I'm about to talk about is your calling, whether you realized it or not. But when you talk about a calling, I want us to understand that when Yahweh calls for somebody, when He calls you, when He gives you we say a calling as a noun, but when a calling takes place, when there's a condition that Yahweh identifies. He identifies a condition, and that condition creates a calling. And that calling, it's like if somebody yelled, "There's a fire down in the kitchen right now." That's a condition that is making, it's being made known to us that demands an immediate response. When you're called by Yahweh, it's because He observed a condition and said, "I need somebody to respond to this condition." Ezekiel 22:29-30 says this: "No one's in the breach." That was the condition. That was the condition which He used to create the calling in our lives. And He's making things so simple. He is simplifying things so much that everything is becoming absolutely crystal clear. And anything that comes our way, I feel like this has nothing to do with my calling. This has nothing to do with the condition that created my calling. And if it keeps me away from fulfilling or responding to this condition that Yahweh highlighted, I got nothing to do with it. Whereas before, some of those things might not have been so clear. Now I feel like, Mike, we have a grandchild here. We have the next generation is here. Things are crystal clear, and I will respond to the condition that created the calling that we have been walking out for 25 years. And we should all seek that clarity of, this is the condition that created my calling, and this is my assignment, and this is what it looks like to answer that calling.
Yeah.
Is this making sense? Mm-hmm. If we reduce our lives to that, it's all about the condition that He highlighted, and He was searching for somebody to occupy that place, and He said, "Nobody is there." Verse 29 says, "The people of the land have oppressively blackmailed, plundered in robbery, wronged the poor and the needy, and abused the outsider unjustly." Verse 30 says, "I searched for someone among them who would build up the wall and stand in the breach before me for the land so that I would not destroy it, but I found no one." So not only is the condition, it's a dire condition, but what adds to the condition is that He searched for somebody to keep him from destroying the land, and He found nobody. That's part of the condition. And I don't know what it was about. I don't know what it is about that. But as we began to know Him in our young salvation, or however you want to say it, this was something that He absolutely highlighted to us and put inside of our DNA. So when we talk about being a responder, right? First responder. Having the type of mentality that when Yahweh highlights a condition, that creates a calling to which we respond. And in our particular life, that calling is that nobody is in the breach that's been caused. So what do we do? Isaiah 58, verses 6 through 12. You can read the entirety of that, but starting in verse 12, it says, "Some of you will rebuild the ancient ruins. You will raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of the breach." Those words, repairer of the breach, was part of our DNA from day one, and we did not understand. Only now today am I starting to really understand what that means. And it coincides with Him saying, "Now I can command you because you have the level of understanding and your ears are circumcised to understand what I said to you 25 years ago. That's the magnitude of where we're at getting read in commissioning, which Yahweh lovingly told us about at Hanukkah. He said, get your sonship dialed in. He says, some of you will rebuild the ancient ruins. Remember, he was searching and found nobody. And he's saying, some of you, which means not everybody is going to have this calling. Right? Not everybody's going to respond to the condition that he's making us aware of. And he says, some of you will rebuild the ancient ruins. You will raise up the age-old foundations and will be called repairer of the breach, restorer of the streets for dwelling. Listen to this. We latched so much onto restore of the breach. I fail to continue to read this part. If you turn your back foot from Shabbat, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call Shabbat a delight, a holy day of Adonai honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways, not seeking your own pleasure, nor speaking your usual speech, then you will delight yourself in Adonai, and I will let you ride over the heights of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of your father Jacob, for the mouth of Adonai has spoken. I don't know if we would have read that part, maybe it wouldn't have taken 25 years.
Like, that's what he's sending us into that.
So we answer that call, and by answering the call, you receive the assignment. That's our assignment. Rebuild the ancient ruins. Raise up the age-old foundations. Be the repairer of the breach. Restore the streets for the purpose of dwelling. Mm-hmm. And all of the implications of that have to do with Shabbat. That's our assignment. Can you see how the Torah is reading us, and there is a commissioning of every single person in here, and I'm not even going to say for those who choose to accept it, because he's issuing a commandment that you be commissioned. He's commanding us to receive the assignment and move out on that directive.
Yeah.
Okay? So we receive the assignment. Again, that's our DNA. Repairer of the breach. Isaiah 61, 1 through 7. The Ruach is upon me because Adonai has anointed me to proclaim the good news to the poor. He sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are bound. Verse 4, they will rebuild the ancient ruins, they will restore former desolations, they will repair the ruined cities and the desolations of many generations. So you have a calling, you have an assignment, and then this talks about the nature and the scope and the extent of that assignment, which is addressing the desolation of generations. That's what he called us to. Repair the breach. The condition is no one's in the breach. And some of you will respond. We are some of the sum. You're part of the sum of those will respond.
Yeah.
And then the impact is everything about these verses, but also the desolation that's happened to generations. You are called to rebuild by standing in the gap. Jeremiah 6, verse 16, one verse. Thus says Adonai, stand in the roads and look. Basically, he's saying, stand at the place where you could go multiple different ways and observe what I'm trying to show you. There's different ways you could go, but stand at the crossroads and look. Ask for the ancient path.
Yeah.
It's I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Nedavot Olam, the path that's ancient, where the good way is, and walk in it. Then you will find rest for your souls. But the people said, we won't walk in it. Mm-hmm. So he's saying, stand at the crossroads and look for the ancient path. A lot of people in Christianity, we've probably heard it 100 times preached about just getting back to basics or getting back to fundamentals or not forgetting certain things you should remember. But what he's talking about, looking to the horizon, is looking beyond what human eyes can see and recognizing that there's something outside of time that you should be looking to. There's an eternal path that you should be observing, and it says that's where the good way is and you should walk in it. It's a well-traveled path, a well-traveled eternal path that everybody who has attached themselves to Yahweh has walked. Abraham, Moshe, David, Yeshua, everybody who walked in Torah has traveled that path, and he's saying, look to that place, that's the way that's good, and walk in it. What are we? Followers of the way. Right? We have to know what the way is that's good. That's the good news. We have to know what the way is so that we can walk in it, so that we will find rest for our souls. Those verses, in summary, conveys what it is that we have been called to. Okay? And we have to know that, because I feel like the commissioning tonight, what is transpiring in the Spirit, we have to understand what our calling is, to understand the nature of the pressure and how the inspection is being applied. It's being applied through the pressure that we are experiencing right now. I wish she wouldn't have said the contractions are going to get closer and closer, because like she said, they did. And it's just the last few days we've been waking up like, what is actually happening right now? It's crazy. Is this making sense? The weight, it's hard to convey the weight of what's transpiring in the Spirit tonight. But for me personally, I wanted to share that so that we can kind of gauge the absolute magnitude of what it is that's happening, in addition to everything we've walked through. It hasn't just been this this season of discovering Torah. Everything has been precept upon precept since the moment we met him. 25 years is culminating now. Somebody I was just talking to, who was part of this pressure and part of this chaos, I told them at the height of everything that we have done in his name, this is when you choose to bow out. At the point when he's saying, now you've gotten to the place where I will actually issue a command for you to follow because you understand it, because you have ears to hear and eyes to see and a heart that's circumcised, I can actually command you now. As a man of war, we are in a state, in a condition where he can command us. We're not the people that he needs to release to go home, to avoid war. He's saying, you're in a condition, you're in a state of readiness that I can actually issue a command. And I'm talking to a son who's been here the entire time, and he says, I'm going to bow out. Now's the time I'm going to choose to quit. Deuteronomy 31, be strong and courageous. Chazak amatz is that in Hebrew. Moshe is strengthening Joshua. He brought him before the nation publicly in order to transfer authority from himself to Joshua, but there was also other things happening. We've talked about this leadership paradigm, and we've been working our way out of Mosaic, Aaronic leadership to embrace the type of leadership that Joshua represents. And we've talked about that. But tonight I want us to understand and have the perspective that there's also there's an accompanying operating system that went with the old style of leadership. And there's also an accompanying operating system with the new style of leadership. And I believe that everything that Yahweh has led us practically that is going to be activated on Tabernacles is that operating system. Everything we're going to walk out as a family absolutely is the manifestation of that new operating system, and I want us to embrace it as such. It is nothing other than an absolute materialization of the new operating system, which is according to the new leadership paradigm. Everything we're doing reflects that new leadership paradigm. So the last thing I want anybody to do is look at what is really greater freedom because of greater maturity, because now we're at a place where he can commission us, and it's a place of more decentralization. Everything is according to each and every household. I don't want us to look at that greater freedom as a misunderstanding of freedom, which means I have to slip back into the old style of leadership because nobody's holding me accountable. We cannot take this greater level of freedom because Yahweh is saying you no longer have a leader that will carry things for you. They're going to give you your weapons, your tools. They're going to equip you. The Torah is going to be read publicly among the entire community, old to young, and on each and individual household, because now you're at a place to walk out the commandments. That is not the time to say, we don't have any Friday nights anymore for the next year, so I don't have to show up and see anybody and have that be the cheap and shallow thing that holds me accountable to any standard.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy to go 20 plus years in some cases, 25 years, 10 year, even a year, even a month. It's crazy to go that far and then toss it away because the perceived accountability is not there.
Yeah.
The accountability is greater.
Yeah. Yeah.
If nobody's calling you, nobody's checking on you, nobody's asking you if you're in the Torah portion, nobody's asking you what it is that Yahweh's calling you to do. Nobody's questioning you on what condition is Yahweh highlighting to you that is demanding attention and a response right now for your house, for the greater community. If nobody's doing that, it doesn't mean less accountability. Do not be deceived. We should be past that. And it is overwhelming. Like she said, be strong and courageous. But even the English does not do it justice. More accurately communicated, it says to firmly take hold of your assignment and remain steadfast in carrying your assignment. It's not even encouragement. This is not, be strong, guys. Be courageous, Abby. You just be strong. This is not encouragement. He said, be. Be this. Be these things. Take your assignment firmly and be steadfast in carrying out your assignment. How do you know what your assignment is? How do you know what your calling is? You have to be in tune to the condition that Yahweh is highlighting around you in your house. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If somebody asks you, what is Yahweh doing in your life? None of us should, I don't know. Well, the pastor preached that. No. Does this make sense where he's taking us? It's so freeing, but at the same time, there's a cost to freedom, and that cost is you are carrying more than you had to when somebody else was raising you up or discipling you, because we're in a state of a lack of maturity because we're being raised up in the wilderness, right? That's the whole wilderness to promised land transition. We cannot make the mistake that, wow, nobody's calling me Friday night. Dad's not yelling at us on Friday night. Right? We can't make the mistake. There is when Sean transitions out of our house, as Jalen's transitioned out of our house, as we think back to when we transitioned out of the house, I go to sleep fine, not knowing where Jalen or Anya are. If they go out on a date, I don't wait up to see when they go home. The kids in my house, I do that. They can do whatever they want. He can stock his fridge with whatever he wants. They can go out, they can go on whatever trips, they can eat however they want, they can stay up as late, they can do whatever. When Sean moves out, same thing. Does that mean there's less accountability? No. There's more accountability, which is the purpose of raising in discipleship. We should, as people stewarding others, we should raise up in the way that they should go, which means at some point when they get to a level of maturity, you go hands off and they will continue on the trajectory of discipleship and maturity beyond the place you had to raise them in. Right?
Yeah.
I want us to understand that is what is happening as we transition after Tabernacles. It is a greater responsibility that He is putting in our hands. Mm-hmm. And we have to know that. So it's not an encouragement. Like I said, the root word of commission is sava, which if you look at the root word of that is actually mitzvah. Commissioning is a commanding. He raised us to the point to where now He can give us orders, and we now have the freedom to obey His orders. That is what your freedom is for. So we're going for, there's two different operating systems taking place. There's formation, the operating system of formation under Moshe is coming to a close. The operating system of possession is going to begin at Tabernacles, but something is transpiring tonight. I want you to think to yourself about everything we've planned. Anytime now moving forward when we talk about the practical things we're going to implement as a family, going from 3 years to a year of the Torah portion. Everybody has the same journal and we're going to be going through the same, it's all centered on Torah, but everybody's stewarding it on their own, right? And then we'll come together, we'll gather together monthly, and all of those things.
On Shabbat. Stood in the Greek.
I want you, whenever you think about those things, you have to understand that this, because we're operating different, that is a sign that we have reached a place where He's saying, okay, now I can command you now. Okay? Our plans are a reflection of that new operating system in action. So you have this transition in Deuteronomy 31, verses 1 through 13. This transition of authority. But with the people remembering that it's Yahweh's authority at the end of the day that is carrying the nation. Okay? Joshua was established publicly. I believe that's what's happening tonight, is through the way that I am going to try to relay where it is that we are and what it is that's happening. Through that, there's a public acknowledgement of the commissioning, because we're going to understand what it is that's happening to us and how what's been perceived as chaos, assault, conspiring, all of those things is actually validation that we're exactly where we need to be. The Torah was entrusted to them. In this Torah portion, there's something transpiring where Moshe is saying, now the Torah is being entrusted to you, to each and every household, for you to then steward for the next generation to take hold of it. Isn't that what we're doing? There's covenant renewal at Sukkot. Everyone gathers to hear, learn, fear Yahweh, and obey. And there's generational continuity all wrapped into what Moshe is talking about in this Torah portion. Everything he's doing, it has to do with that. Okay? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I know I went through that kind of quick. It's 13 verses. We know that we can unpack that and we could spend hours. But as I said, Yahweh really had me meditating on going back to the beginning. Remembering right now, as we're being read by this commissioning word, he had me go back and remember, what is it? You can go back to documents that we wrote up as kingdom heirs at the very beginning and find these exact same verses that I just read to you. And he had me go back and remember, this is what you've been called to, because he's connecting for me personally. I can now, after you have been tested over 25 years, I can now issue you your first command. I can commission you to step into all of those things we just talked about. So I want us to understand the magnitude that we have. It's not, we still have 8 weeks, right, with the timeline of Torah walking us through this, but we have to understand that we have not arrived. We have only been inspected to get to the place where he is saying, okay, now I am going to send you into this because I recognize you can be commanded as a people. So we have to know that. We've been being inspected in the form of warfare and assault and pressure. Okay, and I want to talk about Nehemiah and how this story represents where we have been and ties into our DNA. And my hope is that this will validate and affirm, and this will encourage you about what it is that we've been dealing with and what that points to as it affects who we are. Okay? We always talk about our identity, but I want you to know that, and maybe this will encourage you, if you're like weird, because this will encourage you somehow. But because of our calling, because of your calling, and I say that, if anybody wants to lay down his calling, like she said, hey. If anybody wants to lay it down, you're not part of what we're pursuing, that's fine. But our calling means that you are not welcomed. Just because of the nature of our calling, no, the greater believing faith Christian community does not welcome you.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have to try to figure it out. We don't. The reason why I think this is freeing is because if you're trying to man-please or self-preserve with the aim of feeling welcomed, it's not going to happen. Because the reason why he called us does not allow for you to be welcomed.
Amen.
Sorry. Amen.
Well, yeah, if you're in a breach of desolation. Not very welcoming.
You are not celebrated.
Fine.
Like, the sooner you just let it.
But can I say one thing?
Mm-hmm.
That's why you have to fall in love with the kingdom. Because when you hear the roars of celebration.
Mm-hmm. But listen to what I'm saying, though. What?
That's what I am.
I'm just saying. I'm saying, listen.
Let us have ears to hear. Go ahead.
Because of our calling, like, you have to hear this, because tonight I believe we are being welcomed and celebrated and validated and affirmed. But we have to understand that that's because that's coming from Yahweh. This story that I'm going to break down for us about what we've been going through is affirming and validating the last 25 years of not being welcomed, not being celebrated, not being tolerated, being absolutely criticized, being spit on, being looked down upon, condescended, people trying to take advantage of, people trying to manipulate, people not accepting, people not receiving, people befriending you, and then putting a knife in your back. Not all of that was because of the calling.
Yeah.
But now that he's saying, I'm commanding you now, this is where the validation comes from. Out of 25 years of all of that, tonight I'm saying the validation and the affirmation is here, and my granddaughter's here. She has never been here for any of that. I would do hundreds of years of not being welcomed and not being celebrated, so that generations can step into the affirmation and the validation of a people who have been inspected, that are going to safeguard the good way that we should walk in for generations. You guys are going to, I feel like you're going to freak out when you hear this. Doesn't this get you fired up?
Yes.
Does it get you fired up to be like, don't welcome me?
Yeah.
Don't celebrate me.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're all weird.
Yes.
So remember, he was searching. He said there's a condition. There's robbery. There's blackmail. There's a condition here, and the walls have been broken down. The gates have been burned down. There's a breach. There's a condition. I'm looking for somebody to address that condition and stand in the breach, and there's no one. That's our calling, okay? And you have the assignment in Isaiah. You have the verses I read, you have the assignment. And then you can see the scope of that assignment in Jeremiah. I want to bring us to this story because I feel like this just narrates exactly what it is that we've been going through. And it puts a stamp of affirmation on the fact that you are all being commissioned and commanded right now to step into what it is that we can only step into now after going through everything we've gone through to exit the religion and the systems and the corruption and all of that. Okay? So, we've been actively transitioning out of one operating system to the next. Okay? And I want us to consider this, that Nehemiah, and I'm not going to, we don't need to go into the actual verses of it. I'm just going to kind of summarize for us. But he wept at the condition. He mourned and was moved by the condition, which created a calling and an assignment that affected generations. So for us to, when he says, let us arise and build, who's going to do that? Only the people that are aware. When the calling, one of the worst things that could happen is a calling goes out because there's a condition, a calling goes out, and nobody responds. So over 25 years, we were moved by, mourned over, grieved by a condition, took that calling, responded to that calling, even though we didn't fully understand what it meant. We took, repair the breach, restore the breach. We interpreted that in the immaturity of our salvation as what was immediately in front of our face, marriages, families. But we were on to something. Because it had to do with families and households and dwellings and marriages and generations. The breaches that we saw, that's what we responded to and said, we need to restore the joy to these situations, bring things back from the ashes. All of that stuff in Isaiah 61. So Nehemiah saw, he mourned over the condition. He was moved by it. He was grieved by it. And eventually he said, let us arise and build. We have been actively rebuilding. We've been building. She said it before we started. We're building. We are walking out the very focal point is the word that came to mind. I don't even have the vocabulary to express, like, we are at the, we're at the very pinnacle, I feel like, of what he has called us to. But even pinnacle is not the right word, because I'm not trying to convey like we're at the end. We are walking right now in under the spirit of commissioning. The walk we've been on for 25 years is intersecting with his commissioning so that we can actually step into what is now being restored. We've been repairing the breach. Only when the breach is repaired can then you experience dwelling. When you answer the call created by the condition stated in Ezekiel 22, you will find yourself building under attack. So not only are you not welcomed, and you're not going to be celebrated, but when you fulfill your assignment, when you start walking out your assignment, you're going to get attacked. But it just, there's something about it though that, like, I mean, when I was in law enforcement, I would respond to calls, right? Brian can relate, Dwayne can relate, right? There's a call, and 99% of the time you're not welcome, you're not celebrated, you're under attack. But when you identify though, uh-huh, that there is a condition,
yeah,
that creates a calling, and I'm going to respond and put myself in a situation to change the outcome of that situation, mm-hmm, there's something that supersedes being welcomed, being celebrated, being attacked. I don't care. Because the calling, when you identify with the calling, it's greater than all of those things, and you find your satisfaction where you need to find it. Like, if I told you guys, for the next week, there's this condition that needs to be addressed, and I'm asking each and every one of you to address it as an individual, you're not going to be welcomed. You're not going to be celebrated, and you're going to get spit on and attacked while you do it. Go do it. Right? As if we're operating militarily, mm-hmm, if we're operating in a form of possession, mm-hmm, we're operating on a different frequency, yeah, because it's in terms of there's a mission, there's an objective,
yeah,
there are critical things that need to be stewarded, maintained, that, yeah, cannot be subject to attack. There's, yes, integrity that needs to be upheld. Somebody has to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which ultimately, I feel like the greater thing behind that is at the end of the day, no matter what it is, Yahweh was searching for somebody.
Yeah.
Like just that alone. Yahweh was searching for somebody to answer a call. I don't care what it is. Just knowing that our Father was had to search, that should just get something riled up inside of you that like, let's go.
Yes.
I don't care what it is. So it's easier, I feel like, when we understand, when we just understand right out of the gate. Nobody likes you. Nobody's happy for you. Nobody wants to hear about your being a follower of the way. Nobody cares. I mean, I'm kind of being funny, but I'm not. Right? Nobody wants to hear the amazing, tremendous testimony of the next generation and how they're stepping into covenant. Nobody cares. Oh, you're arranged marriage? Yeah. Nobody cares. Not welcome, not celebrated, subject to accusation, criticism, under attack. That is what we signed up for. But guess what? We get to partner with Yeshua in that to some extent. That's what gets me fired up.
Yeah.
If I'm not excited about suffering, but if I see a loved one suffering, I'm going to suffer with them. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, it's different. So this is what's happening that's bringing the affirmation and the validation after 25 years of all that crap. Okay, when you answer the call to stand in the breach or stand in the gap and build what's been ruined, okay, when you stand in the gap to do that, you are standing with people outside of time. Because remember, what's beyond the horizon is the ancient path. That's the path that all of our forefathers walked on. It was a well-traveled path by all of the patriarchs. It's outside of time, and that's what humanity and man's tradition has ruined, that he's saying, restore that, the reflection of that on the earth. And while you're doing that, you're going to be under attack. So this is the nature of the attack from the story of Nehemiah. Because Nehemiah was doing... Nehemiah is a very close representation to answering the call of the condition created in Ezekiel 22, which is our calling. Okay? And there's all kinds of attacks, and there's different types of attacks, and there's waves of attacks. And I want to describe them because I'm telling you right now, we have experienced every single one. Every single one. So to me, I'm like, I started studying this, and by the time I was like getting excited, like whatever the next one is, I hope we've experienced it because it's starting to become validation.
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Like
you're saying Nehemiah's attacks in Nehemiah's story.
The attacks on Nehemiah and his answering the call. Because if I came across one and I was like, dang it, we haven't experienced that one, I was going to be like, okay, well. It's going to come from somewhere.
You thought which one?
This is the loudest one, but not necessarily the most dangerous.
Hold on. Okay.
Mockery. Cultural commentary. Has to have an audience. Being despised publicly. It sucks, but that's just the loudest one. We've experienced that. Check. But how does Nehemiah answer that? He sets his mind on the assignment. He keeps his mindset on the assignment.
Yeah. Could have said all this to me yesterday morning.
I didn't know. Let's take it a little deeper, different attack. Conspiracy.
Uh-huh.
Coordinated hostility.
Uh-huh.
covertly organized to bring destruction. This one's a little different from the last one, right? Whisper campaigns. What did Nehemiah do? He prayed and he set watchmen. He set a watch and he prayed. What's awesome to me is he instructed the people that answered the call, let us arise and build. They had tools in one hand and weapons in the other hand. I'm like, freaking check. Bible in one hand, AR-15 in the other. Freaking check. This one's different. This one, there's been so much intense pressure. I can say that in our household, we have really been feeling this one in a way that I don't know that we've felt before. Internal discouragement. Feeling weakened, like your strength is weakened, drained because of the demand of the assignment. What did Nehemiah do when everybody was discouraged and they're drained and they're, and it sounds reasonable? It could sound reasonable. In fact, what I was talking about, after 25 years, people just calling it quits. This is that one. I just don't have it in me. I'm just tired. It's too intense. You can put different, you can articulate that different ways, but this is what it comes down to. And what did Nehemiah do? He repositioned the people to see one another and to remember while they were working what they were working for.
Stupid. Tabernacles.
And part of that remembrance is you have to connect. Sometimes you can be working over a sustained amount of time, over a lifetime, your life's work. You can disconnect in your brain what you're doing with your hands from the reason why you're doing it. They were building a wall. A wall is boundaries. A wall is identity. A wall is it's intact. There's integrity to the identity that's taking place within those walls. So how can we use being tired? I'm not saying you can't be tired or drained or discouraged or feeling weak, but you have to remember why you're doing it in order to complete what you're doing for the sake of the next generation. You reposition the people to see one another and remember why they were doing what they were doing. So for me, experiencing the discouragement, the drain, I mean, I wish I had made out a list of the things that we've said over the past week. What the hell are we even, like, what are we even doing? What are we doing? What is witnessing decades of covenant relationship being tossed to the side because people are tired?
Or evil.
Or evil. How... exhausting yourself mentally, trying to wrap your head around the absolute assault. Like, what the insanity of, are we doing something wrong? Like, what are we, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is like the mental spiritual fatigue starts weighing on you to the point to where it's like, but I'll tell you what, getting to tonight and understanding and being so filled with gratitude for the Torah portion and understanding what I'm understanding right now and seeing a granddaughter over there, I will die spiritually fatigued and exhausted. I don't care. I do not care. Being tired and feeling drained will never get close to swaying me or deterring me like it has this last week ever again, because I can see now, I knew it in my head, but the weight of Yahweh saying at the moment when you are feeling like you have nothing left, now I can command you. Like, I'm telling you right now, like that will never happen again. So he repositioned them. This is a good one. Now remember, these are all attacks. And at the end of this, I'm going to tell you what the one singular objective was, even though all these attacks are different. Repeated invitations to quote unquote resolve issues. If you go and you read the story of Nehemiah, he was under attack. He was making people upset. He was stirring things up by the nature of answering his calling. And there were repeated invitations for him to go to a place and just let us resolve. Let's resolve these issues. We have this mutual issue. Like this is so free. Let me tell you guys something. If you are operating in your calling, people will launch an attack on you to make you feel like and to paint it like you and them have a mutual problem. Let me invite you to resolve. Let's talk through this. Let's talk this out.
Which implies we have the same calling, the same response.
But that's an attack. And it'll be clear when we talk about the objective. It tries to get you to misdirect your energy and your focus from what it is that you're doing. But it sounds reasonable, right? You have to be so like, this is a playbook right here. Like you can start, when you have attacks, you can like put them in these categories and be like, oh, they almost got me with that, trying to resolve this mutual issue crap. Nope. But use discernment. Don't take that as, hear what I'm saying. Don't go take that and go use it as a loophole. I better not catch anybody using that like a loophole.
Let me explain a little bit in the spirit mutual issue. Because when you think about what's to come, when the king resides, there's going to be nations that are going to try to... what's the political concept where you try to come to an agreement?
Compromise.
Definitely compromise. I was just thinking of like a literal political treaty. Where a nation is going to try to, what about this, Yeshua? So you gotta hear that in the spirit when he's talking about a mutual issue. He's not talking about a personal dilemma that now you have to stand in a place of I don't have to resolve it. It's talking about compromise on what your calling is to Yahweh. And someone, so that it's like a king being able to, that king is going to be annexed, but that king is trying to be like, well, what about if we just...
Are you talking about trying to bargain?
Yeah, like bargaining. It's like a nation being able, negotiating. You do you, I do me, and maybe we can resolve this. And Yeshua's like, no, I'm here to reign.
Yeah.
And I'll be annexing each and every one of you. So they're not, it's not equal in the sense of calling in that way. He's not talking about personal conflicts. He's talking about in the context of responding to a call, or it could be you're an officer, you go to the door, and immediate negotiation comes. Well, I called you, but we're a little bit better now. What do you think about if we just
Like, as if they're on the same playing ground as his, all the arsenal that he has to make the situation better, they all of a sudden act like they know the situation and say, well, what about, like, how about if you just, am I saying that right? Like, negotiating with you when you already have the authority, like, they're not the ones in authority.
Yeah. You guys writing these down?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have loudest, deeper, different, good one.
How many people are recognizing attacks, but you didn't recognize it before?
What did Nehemiah do?
He said when he got those invitations,
yeah,
he repeatedly said no.
Ha!
I'm doing a great work.
Ha!
I'm busy.
Yeah.
I don't got time for that.
I'm busy?
I mean, I'm not. I'm paraphrasing.
Which scripture is that? Yeah. Where is that in the word? I've got time for that.
Okay, now we're on a progression.
Okay.
The first one was the loudest, least dangerous. We're getting more dangerous. Slander. In the form of open letters. You know what an open letter is?
Ooh.
You want to know what an open letter is? Technically, all of these are open letters. Dear Kingdomers, open letter. Whitingers, open letter. Justin and Tanya, open letter. These are all open letters, and I'm going to tell you why. And I'm putting them on the floor because Nehemiah took these things and he just submitted them to the Lord. Slander in the form of open letters, because what's in those letters is designed to sow seeds of accusation and destruction to anyone who reads them.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So it's like putting a letter in the newspaper. Anybody who reads that, seeds are going to be sown of accusation and destruction. Seeds that will try to come to fruition in your life and result in destruction. There are things in these letters that we said purposely, we are not going to read these. We didn't have the verbiage, but we're not going to read these open letters because they're seeds of accusation and destruction that we are not going to let fall into the soil of this family. What did he do? He simply just, he didn't engage, he didn't argue, he didn't litigate. He basically just said, that's falsehood. He didn't give his time and energy and focus to arguing or defending those things. And we've received a lot of letters.
Over the years, not just in the last couple of months.
Stupid letters.
Letter writing. If you're thinking about writing a letter, just stop and think about it.
Anyone.
I don't mean to me.
Think about all these the different dimensions of these attacks, though. It's just crazy when you think about the nature of an attack, how an attack can take place, all of these things. All right, this is the last one from the story. As I interpret it, I'm trying to do my best to identify the different waves of attacks. This is, I would say, the most dangerous, the most egregious, the most violating. When that scripture, Ezekiel 22, talks about the people of the land have oppressively blackmailed, plundered in robbery, wronged the poor and the needy, and abused the outsider unjustly. This is how that took place. This attack comes in the form of spiritual advice or counsel from what I would call a profit for hire. Somebody who has some level of spiritual credibility, and because they operate in bribery, they are willing to leverage their spiritual credibility as a quote-unquote prophet to give you spiritual advice or counsel on what you should do about a situation, but really there's an agenda behind it, and they're being paid by somebody to deliver that message. Like our family, not you guys directly, but through us, our family has been subject to this type of attack. And what did Nehemiah do? He exercised discernment. He acted on his discernment, and he refused to subscribe to what he knew was not Yahweh's voice. That's gross, huh? So what's the common objective with all of these methods of attack? What do you guys think?
Stop building.
The common objective is for you to get off the wall, for you to not stand in the breach, for you to set aside the condition that Yahweh highlighted to you by stepping out of the response that you stepped into. If our calling that Yahweh is saying, hopefully this is connecting, because I feel like there's multiple things connecting in all of this for us to understand what it is that we're stepping into. We have been actively repairing a breach. And that breach, when you look at Jeremiah 6, as kind of the culmination of our calling, looking to the ancient path, the good way, Haderach, the way, the truth, and the life, and walk in it, that is expressly speaking about Torah. That is Torah. Find the good way and walk in it. That is Torah. So our calling from 25 years ago to restore and repair the breach has been an assignment to build, to rebuild a wall that he can essentially abide inside of that boundary, and we can dwell with him, and we can engage in Shabbat, and we can do all these things. We can follow Torah because we've been building a wall. And for our community, I believe what's transpiring and what we're stepping into on the other side of Tabernacles is we have built, for our community at least, the wall has been rebuilt. In order for us to abide inside of that wall and step out on the practical assignment that Yahweh showed us to step out of. Is this...
Yeah.
Is that making sense?
Mm-hmm.
So then it... When you see that and it becomes clear, that's where the affirmation and the validation comes in. That... And that's where it started turning into... Not just like, man, we've been subject to all of this, but like these are like now milestones. Yep, been subject to that one, been subject to that one. Checking off all these boxes, and the common objective is to get us to not stand in the gap, to not stand in the breach, to leave the gate wide open, so that what Yahweh has walked our community through and got us to a point to where he's saying, now I can command you. Not only am I not searching for somebody to step in the breach, but now I can command you to actually operate in a way that his people were supposed to operate before the breach even occurred. So is it making sense, like the magnitude of where we're at? We're not just, a few months from now, we're not just continuing to do business as usual. Like we are fundamentally different. We are operating a completely different way that we've never operated before. And every attack that we have come under in the form of pressure has been his method of inspection. Are you going to get up off the wall that I was looking for somebody to build? are you going to leave your post? Are you going to leave your assignment? And that's what gets me so fired up. Just the utter giving over to what these attacks would try to make, the way they try to make you feel, giving yourself into that as a victim and saying to yourself, I am just so tired. When, I mean, and everybody's freaking tired. Everybody's tired. Everybody's busy. Everybody's got tons of stuff going on. Right? But when it comes down to a condition that Yahweh highlights to us, we don't stand in the gap tired then. But if people are like, I'm just tired, I can't do it anymore. And I know what it's going to cost others to carry what, you know, they're going to have to not only build their section of the wall, but they're going to have to watch their backs while they're building their section of the wall while there's this gap in the fence. Right? And what's interesting about that is when he turned the people towards each other to encourage them, it was about their households. They were responsible for the fence opposite their household. It was about households. It was about the community. It was about each and every individual owning their own portion or their own section of the wall that had to be rebuilt and upheld. But yet part of the attack that just tries to make you tired and drained and spiritually fatigued is when people say they drop their tools and their weapons and they just walk off and just leave the breach in their fence. I can't repair it. You guys are going to have to do it. Right? And it's such a beautiful picture, because then I feel like it's easier and more profound for us to understand what it is that we're stepping into. So when we step into a transition after Tabernacles, and it's not meeting on a Friday night, it's decentralizing what it is that Yahweh is doing, the authorities being decentralized to each and every household, and everybody's being trusted as a watchman to take care of their portion of the wall that's represented by their household. And we have to understand that. If we look at this and we perceive it, because you're not seeing accountability right in front of your face as an immature disciple, if we're not seeing that and we're taking it as, oh, well, somebody else must be taking care of it, right? It's going to cause a problem. But I'm amazed at who he is and how he walks us through things. And when I look at 25 years of my life, I'm just filled with gratitude that he has, all we have had is a passion to obey him and respond to what it is that he shows us. And he has faithfully walked us through, I mean, everything. And at the height of us feeling absolutely insane, the Torah once again steps in and he goes, let this read you. And it's like, oh my God, this is everything. You know, it's like feeling insane all alone, and the Father steps in and tells you exactly what you need to hear. And then you're like, all right, I'm encouraged and I'm locked in. And shows the cost, what the cost could be. Like, to me, people give themselves over to things, they quit, they're tired, whatever the attack, they give into whatever form of attack, and they're off the wall. They're off the wall. And I'm just filled with gratitude that he would work so beautifully to show me personally in a way, no, I'm validating you. You've been treated this way by people. I'm validating you. I'm affirming you. And that little 9-pound little girl over there is all the affirmation and validation I need to continue to get spit on and treated a certain way for the rest of my life. I don't care. So, hopefully whatever I cannot articulate, hopefully is landing in whatever way it needs to land.
Can you read Isaiah, is it Isaiah 55?
58.
This is crazy. I'm remembering all these scriptures in our first documents of trying to write things out for family development ministries.
It says, some of you will rebuild the ancient ruins, you will raise up the age-old foundations.
Why did we have that in our document? What ancient ruin were we talking? What ancient way?
I guess what's crazy is, even aside from Torah, in our view, in being in the thick of it, is like, you could easily say is something that's transpired in the last, 5 years? Right? But what's crazy to me when I look back, I'm like, we're exactly where we need to be, because Torah is what he called us to in the very beginning. We just didn't know.
And
did you want me to keep reading that?
Yes, just keep reading.
Some will raise up age-old foundations, will be called repairer of the breach, restorer of the streets for dwelling. If you turn your back foot from Shabbat, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call Shabbat a delight, the holy day of Adonai honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways, not seeking your own pleasure, nor speaking your usual speech, then you will delight yourself in Adonai, and I will let you ride over the heights of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of your father Jacob, for the mouth of Adonai has spoken.
So
didn't read that part.
So, well, I don't even know if it mattered that we read. We don't know what ancient foundations were.
Yeah.
Anyways, what's so powerful is, you know, these are prophecies. The prophecies are so powerful because they have not been fulfilled yet. And yet, some of them have been. So you can look at it from where we are right now, but you can also look at it to what's to come. So when you look at that progression, to be a responder means you have to do something, which causes, it's the repair, right? Building the ancient, it's not like he's saying, I'm going to. I mean, he's going to, but through that you would be that you would repair. So when that happens, then it produces Shabbat. So for us right now, if 25 years has been to repair, because we've been talking about that, we've been surviving, and we're going to be turning into the promise, which would be more thriving or building in the sense of not necessarily what you're saying, but if this is just the beginning, you build a wall for a purpose, because when he dwells, then what? You know, so if you've been repairing, it's for Shabbat. Then there's also a future implication that as we repair the ancient ways, it's so that Shabbat can reign, because when he comes, it's Shabbat for a whole millennium. But then I'm thinking of like how little we are, but just in the concept of we actually have been, I mean, I know that that's what you said, but I'm just, yeah, like we actually have been rebuilding. We've been repairing. We've been going back to the ancient ways. That's all we've been doing. And we're going into culture and Shabbat where we dwell. I mean, it's such a small taste, but then to get excited about tabernacles, you're actually prophetically calling forth the rain of what's to happen if you rebuild, if you, all those things, if you endure. I mean, read Revelation. If you're an overcomer, what, you're going to have to get past those attacks. You're going to have to be an overcomer, and you are an overcomer by what? Yes, the two things. You have to obey and have his name. So the only way that you can overcome is to follow Torah and have Yeshua's name, which is the community that we're building. And so then you understand what being an overcomer is, and then overcoming it now, but then the future implication, but the promise of Shabbat. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm blown away that at Tabernacles we're shifting into not just, hey guys, you know, we're at leadership shift, we're just not going to meet on Friday nights anymore. But that the focus is culture, dwelling, and Shabbat, which is the next step in the calling, according to our stupid documents we wrote up 25 years ago. That's crazy.
Yeah, right where you need to be.
It's right where you need to be. Just so you guys know, he's a lot, you know, bolder. Can you imagine with what I was in yesterday if he rolled over and he was like, we're all tired. Stand in the gap, tired. Not that I said I was tired, but this is just this is real. When you are like, what is, you know, and so then to just go through, when you're in the midst of that, like you said, to be validated or milestones to keep going. And this is real. Even in the attack of open letters. I mean, I openly told you guys, it was like this close to being like, oh, we're not dwelling. I mean, it was like this close to being like, oh, well then we're not. That's that dream of getting closer. That was the attack. And it was an active, it wasn't like a, think about Nehemiah. It is an active hearing him to keep going, to get to a place to say, you know what, at Tabernacles, why don't you all come back into my home?
Yeah.
It's that. It's being an overcomer. It's being obedient. It's walking the ancient paths. It's hearing his voice. I said it from the beginning. You have to know who's celebrating you or you're not going to make it. It does not mean you can't have those low moments, but you've got to get into a place of being able to hear those celebrations, know what it is that's being welcomed, and discern so that you don't get mixed up. So, not that we don't know that, but in the next 8 weeks, it might continue to contract. Okay.
Amen. Great. Well, with that, we're talking about like feeling the press. Has everybody been feeling that this week?
Can everybody agree to that?
Yep.
Was anybody encouraged in knowing, like, when you feel like you're at the end of yourself, he commissions? It's like, oh, thank God, because I can't do it on my own. So I just thought that was really encouraging. As far as for our giving, I think this is, again, just another one of those pieces where when he's talking about we have the freedom now to obey his orders rather than, like, you know how we won't have, like, our routine Friday nights. This is our opportunity to see that even in our tithe. I know that we've talked about it, but, like, Friday nights, we're not going to have the routine reminder. You're not going to have John's lovely voice every week saying, hey, don't forget, or like tying some things together, but really taking the word on our own. We're going to have to own that beyond just our own personal receiving, but be able to take that and own it ourselves to be able to sow into what he's doing. So there's practical pieces in that freedom that we have, that freedom to obey and to remember and to own those things on our own. Did you guys all write down the differences that Dad was going through with Nehemiah?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully. I was downstairs, so I missed part of it. But
action items, but I don't focus on that.
Yes.
What do I do with it?
Yes.
And I was freaking awesome.
That was super equipping to be able to take those and hear it, because it literally, like, that was the easiest breakdown of a blueprint
mm-hmm.
I think we could possibly get in, like, if this happens, this is what you do. If this happens, this is what you do. If this happens, this is how you respond. This is the expectation. This is what I expect from you. This is the freedom that you'll have, and this is what it looks like to obey in that situation, rather than running your mouth, rather than being pissed off, rather than losing sight of where you're going, rather than getting subjecting yourself to the chaos. This is what you do.
Yeah.
And so I Ezra, I thought that was just super equipping to be able to have that piece to be able to take home and carry, because if the press continues and intensifies, or continues to intensify the way that it has, I feel like we'll we'll need those like posted to our forehead to like keep moving and keep remembering and keep striving and not forget those pieces. So when you write your check or if you have your tithe, I'll pass that around, but give yourself a practical, sorry, but they got it. Write yourself in the memo, like something that's going to help you remember those things of what you're sewing into is like that tangible piece, is that reminder, is that sticky note on your forehead of don't forget, keep going, keep pressing, step outside yourself. You've been commissioned, be encouraged, and don't forget, no one likes you. Like it's that reminder to just keep going. So make sure that that's written somewhere.